This is Adam Asquith with University of Hawaii Sea Grant College Program.
And this is Don Heacock with the Division of Aquatic Resources.
Welcome to another version of Kauai, Kai, and Why, where we talk about sustainable and traditional management of our island's freshwater and marine resources.
We're going to, as usual, focus on a watershed holistic approach. In many ways, we're back to the future. The Ahupua system was a integrated, community-based natural resource management system. And our program, Kauai Kai AY, is every first and third Friday of the month.
And today we're going to talk about water quality. And again, welcome to our latest version of Kauai Kai and Why. We're going to be talking about water quality on our island. And we have a special guest calling in, Dr. Carl Berg, who has been involved for many, many years on water quality aspects, and is going to share some of the most recent results of water quality sampling program that he helps coordinate. Carl, are you on the line?
I am on the line.
Hey, good morning, Carl.
Carl, I understand you've been under the weather, so I appreciate you calling in and taking the time with us.
Well, I think I'm under the weather because I was out there doing the water sampling when it was really polluted and wasn't careful enough.
I understand exactly where you're coming from. I'm just recovering from a terrible bout with a staph infection that I'm sure I got from dirty water also. So, Carl, before we get started in your program, I was wondering if you can kind of give us listeners a bit of a background on where you're from, your education, how you got to Kauai, and how you got interested in water quality issues.
I moved to Kauai 23 years ago, having gotten my doctorate degree in zoology from the University of Hawaii, Manoa. And then I went back to the East Coast and was a university professor and a research scientist at the Marine Biological Laboratory in Woods Hole, Massachusetts, with research appointments at Harvard and Columbia universities. I also worked for the state of Florida, and there, down in the Florida Keys, I saw what was happening with all of the pollution coming from septic systems and cesspools and how it was destroying the coral reefs back 23 years ago. I left there and came here to Kauai, and after building a house, took a position as a environmental scientist for the Department of Health, and I measured water quality in the streams and rivers on this island. And that I left after 3 years, and that position is now filled by Gary Uenton, who is the Department of Health Clean Water Branch representative here. And what they do, and what I did back then, was to measure the bacteria counts at the beaches on this island, and only at the beaches. Drinking water is a separate item, and I'm talking about environmental aspects. And when I was testing it, I discovered that a lot of our streams and rivers, if not all of them, were polluted, as indicated by high bacteria counts. And that the state did not want to post as warning signs on these streams and rivers, and they didn't want to do anything really about cleaning them up. Jump ahead 20 years, approximately, I have been doing a lot of work in Hanalei, in all of the Hanalei rivers and streams and the Hanalei Bay, and found the same thing, that there were constantly high levels of mud, as measured by turbidity, which is how much light passes through the water. There are high nutrient levels from fertilizers and sewage, and there is high bacteria counts. And these bacteria, the kind that we look at is called Enterococcus, and it is a indicator of fecal feces in the water from a warm-blooded animal. So that means it's human, or it is pig or cow or horse or buffalo or bird or rat or pig again. But it is not turtle or shark or fish any of the invertebrates there.
Okay, so that our listeners understand, when you take the sample and you measure how much bacteria is in the water, you're not measuring a type of bacteria that can make us sick. It's one that would be associated with those. Is that right? It's an indicator.
It's an indicator, and it's one that was chosen such that it would not make you sick readily.
Right.
They didn't want people going out there and sampling the water and testing the water with a highly contagious or a highly pathogenic type of bacteria. So this is a relatively safe indicator that there is other kinds of bacteria and, more importantly, viruses that in those waters, because the waters are contaminated with feces from a warm-blooded animal. Now, we have different kinds of health risks. If the water has poop in it from a bird or from a pig or a cow, maybe, then they don't carry very many diseases, or none, that can be transmitted through the water to humans. But if the water is contaminated with human sewage, then almost all of the viruses and bacteria that are in one human can get transmitted by being in the water for a short period of time to another human. So there's a high public health risk. But what the nation as a whole, through the Environmental Protection Agency, has done is to say, well, as an indicator of fecal contamination, we'll just look at this one kind of bacteria, Enterococcus, because we can culture it, we can count it, we can measure it easily.
Carl, just one point of clarification. It has been stated that leptospirosis is probably the greatest health risk in fresh water in Hawaii. Virtually all the animals that you listed, rats, pigs, cows, are carriers of leptospirosis. In fact, one publication that was done by the Department, either the Department of Ag or the Department of Land and Natural Resources about 25 years ago, looked at the leptospirosis as a threat to the aquaculture industry, and they actually went out and measured, took titers, subsamples of cow urine, and found as many as 5,000 leptospires per milliliter, which is about the size of an eraser on a pencil. 5,000 of those per milliliter.
Yeah, I think, Don, that they probably tested the blood of the cattle and things to measure the actual antigen titer. That's the way it normally does. And I was involved trying to invent a technique that we could measure how much live leptospirosis was in the waters of Kauai. And it's just extremely difficult because they're so small and they stick to everything, and it doesn't work. But we do have, for a long time now, a good test to measure the antigen buildup in your blood system, and whether that's in the cattle or the pigs or the rats or the humans, you can go and test and say, oh, yeah, these animals have built up a response against that particular kind, that race or that cerevar, that's all
right,
the same word, of that kind of lepto. And you're right, the lepto, it can be deadly, and it's a real problem on this island, and we have people getting it all the time, but we can't measure it in the field, so we don't know what streams are polluted with lepto, or whether if they're stagnant there's more or is there less. And the response of the health department for lepto has been to post those red and white leptospirosis warning signs on most of the streams in the state. And I think it's unfortunate because so many of our same streams are polluted with fecal-indicating bacteria, but they're not posted. And I only know of two stream systems that are posted with big warning signs. One is the Hanalei River, and that is because I did extensive testing over about a 3-year period funded by EPA, which showed that, in fact, back in 2003 to 2005 that there were bacteria that could be traced back to humans in that water. And so they put a sign up at Black Pot, two signs, saying, warning, this water may be contaminated with human waste. If you have any questions, call Department of Health. The other one is the Alawai Canal, and they have that warning sign there, and they tell you, don't go in the water because the water is so bad. But it's not a concern if you row your canoe in the water or your kayak in the water because you're not immersed in it and you're not going to get it in your eyes, ears, and throats.
Just don't hoolie, right?
Right.
Or lick your paddle.
So what's bad about that is that in a lot of our waters where we now know we have high bacteria counts, we're finding that people are giving stand-up surfing lessons, stand-up paddling lessons. The kids play in this water. It's being used to teach in, and yet the water is polluted. They shouldn't be in there.
Okay. Carl, I'd like to back up just a little bit because you talked about, you know, the Department of Health, that you used to do the testing, and now Gary Wenton has a position that they do the testing. So what do they do, right, and not do compared to what you and your programs and volunteers do? Are you testing for the same bacteria?
So I'm involved with two testing programs, actually three testing programs now, through Surfrider. And the Department of Health, Gary Wenton, goes out and grabs water samples at approximately calf length at beaches all around the island once a week. And he then brings those samples back to the laboratory in Lihue, where they use a IDEX test for measuring Enterococcus bacteria, and also they measure Clostridium perfringens, which is another type of fecal-indicating bacteria. Surfrider has a contract, and one day a week, my research assistant, Leah Sausen, goes to beaches on the North Shore and grabs water samples and takes them to the Department of Health, where they run the analysis for that fecal-indicating bacteria. The reason Leah is doing it is that Gary is very busy that same day testing the west side of the island, and you can't test both sides of the island in the same day and get them to the laboratory. I also have a program where we're testing the pollution and nutrient levels in the streams, all of the streams that go into Hanalei Bay. And we test those on Monday mornings. And that's Waikoko, Waipa, Waioli, Wailea, and Hanalei. And those were testing the estuaries, which the Department of Health doesn't do. The Department of Health only tests the beaches. Then, once a month, the second Saturday of every month, Surfrider tests the surf sites. So I have about 16 different people who paddle out and go to the most common surf sites on the island, whether that's Niddles or Pine Trees in Hanalei or Kalihivai or Kealia, Kalapaki, Pakalas, down PKs, all around the island. And we bring those samples back to my place where I run the exact same test for Enterococcus, the exact same methodology, exact same test as the Department of Health does for this Enterococcus bacteria. Now, those results, we post on the National Surfrider website and also our website, Kauai, and that website is kauai.surfrider.org. And you go look at our Blue Water Task Force, BWTF, and what will come up is a map that has on it the values and a little dot, red, yellow, or green dot, that tells you how polluted those were at this Saturday sampling. And if you are really interested in one spot, you can click on it, and all of the data for the past couple years will show up, telling you how polluted that site is for our monthly sampling. So the big breakdown here is that the Department of Health only samples the beaches. And some, the most popular beach sites, they sample twice a week, and others they sample once a week, and some they only sample half a year. Surfrider samples the rivers, the estuaries, and out there at the surf breaks. So we're not trying to duplicate what Department of Health does, because they do a fine job at sampling that. But we're trying to get those other places. And the rationale for those other places are, one, that it's the surf breaks where surf riders spend all their time, not on the beach. And the other thing is, and this ties back to the sources, is that we know that most of the fecal-indicating bacteria, most of the pollution is coming down the rivers and streams and out into the ocean. That's where it's coming from. So we feel that we should go out and actually measure the source. And then what we expect is that the Department of Health will put up warning signs for those that are always polluted, and that they will try to do something to cut back on those pollution levels. Now, the Department of Health has, the state of Hawaii has laws and regulations that say if there is a known sewage spill, the pipe broke, the pump station broke, stormwater overflooded the sewage, then that beach area should be closed and posted. And anyone can post that as warnings, you know, sewage is there. It could be the Marriott Hotel or the county of Kauai. They can post it and say, warning, sewage is here. Stay out. But it's only the Department of Health that has the authority to go in and do the tests and say, okay, the bacteria are all washed away now and it's clean, and so you can open up those beaches. So we really have a problem that we need to, I feel, warn people about there being pollution in the water. The Department of Health does have another mechanism, and this is why we had the article in the newspaper recently, that when it rains a lot, we know that all of the poop washes off of the land, and whether that's cat, dog, rat, cow, whatever, or human, it washes off the land into the rivers and streams and goes out into the ocean, and it makes the oceans really muddy. So when it is a really muddy condition, the Department of Health puts out a brown water advisory, because their tests have shown that when it is muddy, it's polluted with everything, and they want to warn the people then to stay out of the water. And we had, this past weekend, we had a case where we had all those rains on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and so the Department of Health did put out a brown water advisory. But unfortunately, I don't think very many people hear that on the radio or how it's put out, and it also does not come out necessarily in a timely fashion. It comes out the day after it rained. And so we would like to be more aware of what's going on and more proactive. Now, in the newspaper, they put out the advisory, the written advisory from the Department of Health. What is this brown water advisory? And I'd like to read it to you because it's really frightening. And here I am quoting, the public is advised to stay out of floodwaters and stormwater runoff due to possible overflowing cesspools, sewer manholes, pesticides, animal fecal matter, dead animals, pathogens, chemicals, and associated flood debris. That's nasty stuff. It includes our pesticides we've been talking a lot about, dead animals, chemicals, all that stuff is in that water. And so they say, hey, stay out of floodwaters and stormwaters. And what I would like, and what I proposed in that newspaper article, is that in addition to putting this on the radio or something, that perhaps the Department of Health could put a sign on some of the beaches, just like the high surf advisory signs go up, and that tell people, you know, hey, if you didn't hear it on the radio or you didn't see it in the newspaper, this, if the water is really brown, you should not be going in that. Or if you really have to go in and go surfing, then you need to be sure you wash off when you get out of the water. But the advisory doesn't do enough, because I feel that we, on our island, we need to start looking at the source. We need to, instead of just warning people to stay out of the water, we need to do something in the apua so that we don't have these terrible, terrible conditions of runoff when we get heavy rains. And whether that runoff is dead animals, pesticides, cesspool overflowing, none of it is really acceptable. And so I think we as a community, because no one's going to do it for us, need to start looking in our own apua and saying, hey, what can we do to keep this from being washed off every time it rains?
You know, Carl, that's a really good point. I think just for our listeners, we're talking really about urban stormwater runoff. Stormwater's been running off of Kauai for over 5 million years, probably not causing any problems whatsoever. But we've modified our watersheds. We've made much of the watershed impervious with concrete, asphalt, roofs, et cetera, et cetera. And what that causes, let's take a little watershed like Pu'ali, for example, at Niumalu. The middle of the watershed has shopping centers, golf courses, housing developments. When it rains now, an average two-year flood, let's say, actually translates to a 25 to 50-year flood, because instead of that water soaking into the grass and forest floor, it hits rooftops, driveways, is headed straight into a storm drain, is discharged straight into the stream, and then it increases the storm flow by, in some cases, up to 900%. Over what it's normally would happen. What that happens is you change the hydrology, you change the hydraulic, the pressure that the stream will have on the stream bottom, and it causes bank erosion, undermines and causes a lot of sedimentation that, of course, then is discharged into Nahwiliwili Bay just minutes later. One of the basic problems is that the county did a great job in upgrading their stormwater protection plan, but it didn't quite go far enough. What it does is it still allows lots of impervious surfaces to be built in parking lots and shopping centers, but it then tries to catch the stormwater runoff in a sedimentation basin or something like that, rather than, as the state of Washington and Oregon do, they design buildings kind of like the Walmart in Lihue that has a grass moat completely around it that catches that stormwater runoff, traps all the straws, cigarette butts, petrochemicals dripping off of cars, and catches it in that basin so that it is not discharged into the stream. And we really need to, I agree with you, Carl, we need to go back and say, how can we restore our watershed ecological integrity, from riparian plants along the stream, actually trying to soften some of the areas by putting in pervious pavements. Washington, you can't even put in your driveway to your car, into your house, without having those little hollow tiles that grass grows in, so that when it rains, the rain will percolate into the ground. That's our major paradigm shift that we're going through right now. In 1930, civil engineers designed everything so that the water would hit the roof, go onto the parking lot, into the storm drain, and into the stream, get it off the land as quickly as possible. Now what we want to do is spread it over the watershed, let it percolate into the ground so that it doesn't add sediment, terrigenous sediment, mud, onto our reefs. And it, besides, that water, if it percolates into the ground, that's tomorrow's drinking water. We need that.
I think, Don, that that we do have a tremendous urban problem here. But I think if you look at the amount of land that is covered by agriculture, and much of that large-scale agriculture does not have effective pest management practices, so that a lot of mud runs off of the fields, and that causes not fecal contamination, but it does cause the heavy muds, which destroys the coral reefs and the fisheries resources. And the other major pollutant is the Department of Transportation. All of their impervious roads, and then all the oil and tire material that's on them. But more importantly, if you look at the sides of our roads on this island, there, so many of them are just red dirt, and they don't plant them. They go in and spray them with pesticides and stuff. And then whenever we have a rain, just think of the Willy Willy Road or down in how everything comes right down to the harbor, down that hill, and floods the whole area. So that the highway department, and I would ask our listeners, as they drive around, just look at how many miles of red sides of the roads you see. And know that every time it rains, it just runs down into the ocean and kills our reefs and things like that. So I think one of the points you made, Don, is so important, is that with climate change, we're going to have major changes in our rainfall patterns and the amount of rain we get. And being a little island, we really have to become more aware of and become more self-sufficient for our own drinking water. And so we can't let anything run off anymore. We need to retain it on land to grow our plants and also put it back into our aquifers. And climate change is really going to affect ability for agriculture and for people to survive throughout the world.
Carl, I want to take us back to your bacterial count sampling and the Department of Health. And you said the Department of Health posts. I'm trying to understand. They only open beaches after they've been closed based upon the bacteria counts. They only close beaches when someone has notified them of a sewage spill. Is that what you said?
That's exactly what I said.
So I'm trying to wrap my mind around this. So they run all over the island taking samples in the beach, but they don't have a policy of closing the beach based upon those samples.
They have a policy of closing the beaches if they can be sure that it's human sewage. And so one of the factors then that we're working on is that using molecular genetic techniques to show that these bacteria that we're counting actually are from humans, and so therefore they should be closing the beaches when those counts are high. At the moment, they use the excuse that, oh, we don't know whether that's sewage or not, so we don't need to close the beaches.
Yeah, because there's the brown water alert. To me, that's kind of like a duh. I mean, you know, and I'm sure when Don and I were hardcore surfers and Kalihiwa is going off, I'm paddling out regardless of turds, logs, whatever, we're going out. But to me, the bigger concern, and I think to a broader cross-section of our community, is on a beautiful Sunday afternoon, right, where you go down to any stream mouth, Kalihiwai, Anahola, Kalapaki, and all the keiki are not in the beach, right? They're in the Muliwai. They're in the estuary because there's no waves. It's shallow water. It's not brown water. It looks quite clear, right? And the Department of Health isn't even sampling that water. So now we're dependent upon you guys and your program. And can you give us an idea of, you know, that the quality of that water?
Yeah, and so what I have in front of me are just the bacteria counts that we did this last weekend that Surfrider did. And people should know that the nationwide criteria or law is that a sample should have less than 104 bacteria per 100 ml. So that's the important number, 104. So Wainiha Stream, at the mouth of Wainiha Stream, it had 520. So that's five times. And for all of these things, I like to point out that our counts are really, we're looking at how many times above the limit. It's not that it's close. I wouldn't argue, oh, you're 20 bacteria over, but it's a lot more. Hanamaulu Stream has always been polluted, and this past weekend its count was 3,076. So that's 30 times the limit. Now, Willy Willy Stream, which goes right down by JJ's broiler there, that had 7,701. Now, Kalapaki Surf only had a count of 197 because the ocean water comes in and mixes it all up.
Dilutes it, yes.
And lowers it down, so that's not the problem. Niamalo County Beach Park, where Kaiola Canoe Club is, which gets water from Hulia and Puali Stream and from the bay, well, that count, that one was 9,804.
And again, the standard is 100, basically 100.
104. Okay.
Yeah, basically.
Now, so the last one, because this is an area that really is polluted, it's Waikomo Stream. And Waikomo Stream empties in at Kaloa Landing, where everybody goes snorkeling and diving. And that one has a count of 1,726. So we're comparing those numbers against the standard of 104. But there's another standard that's in our Hawaii revised statutes, and it says that five samples taken over a month's time should have a geometric mean, in a sense an average, of no higher than 35. And what this tells you is you can have an occasional spike, a rainy day, but overall, you know, over 5 weeks or something like that, that it should really be pretty low. It should only be 35. But Hanamaulu, for this year, that's 11 samples. That one isn't 35. It's 1,011. And Niamalu Beach Park is 1,686. Now, Willy Willy Stream, 726. That's not 35. It's 726. And Kaloa Landing has a average geometric mean average of 1,346 over the course of this year. So these were not taken all in a month's time. It was taken over this year's time. But that is a indicator that these places, these streams, which the Department of Health doesn't sample because they know they're polluted, but we're saying that these things have extremely high bacteria counts all the time. 100% of the time when we go down there, they're polluted. And therefore, you really should not have your keiki playing in those stream mouths. And you shouldn't use them for commercial purposes, like to go snorkeling out of or to go paddling out of or something like that.
Carl, just for interest, have you ever sampled Hanakapi'i? I mean, Wainiha has had, at least, had cattle ranching, lots of wild pigs, people living in the lower reaches of the stream. It's still inhabited by people, and it has very shallow water table, obviously, if you're living close to the stream. But what about Hanakapi'i, where no one lives? Have you ever got any baseline from a stream like that?
Department of Health has gone out to Kalalau. They've helicoptered into Kalalau and other places, and they do sample also out at Polahalli. And basically at those beaches, again, not the streams, they find no indicators of fecal pollution.
Which is what we would expect because of dilution.
Right, but they don't go and actually test the stream on any regular basis at, say, Hanakapi'i or out at Kalalau or any place else, because logistically it's so hard. And I should add that these samples, you have to take the water sample before the sunlight comes, really gets too bright, because that will kill them, and you have to have them in the lab, and you have to you have to change them with or test them within 4 or 5 hours before. So you can't go hiking all the way into Kalalau and get the samples back out again. But so what I think I'd like to direct this, I think we have shown that these streams really are very polluted with wastes of warm-blooded animals, fecal-indicating bacteria, and we are getting some molecular genetic tests now that say, yeah, some of these do have human wastes in them. And so what we should do about it? Well, I think the first thing we do is we warn people with signs, but the second thing is we need to go and find out where is this coming from and clean it up. One of the other examples I like is the pond at Lydgate, and the community just spent hundreds of man hours cleaning all that wood out of the pond. And I haven't been there this week, but I bet you it's all filled up again because of the heavy rains we had and the Wailua River just pouring mud and debris out. And and so the question is, when are we going to start going and looking at the stream banks and cut back on the amount of mud and trim back the trees and things so it doesn't wash out, down? And the bigger thing is, when are we going to stop thinking of the streams and the estuaries and the ocean as our dumping grounds? That we can't afford to do that anymore. And so we as a community, and we, APWA, one at a time, have to go look in our own backyards, and whether, as Don mentioned earlier, our in our own yards, what's running off into the storm drains, and in the broader picture, what's looking up behind us? Where is the industrial area? Where are they dumping? And what are the streams doing? Where does all this bacteria come from in the Willy Willy stream? We're pretty sure that some of it comes from the old cesspools that are up behind there. So I think it's time for the community to really start working with the Department of Health and Department of Agriculture to cut back, and the Department of Transportation was a big one, to cut back on the amount of mud that runs off, the amount of water that runs off, and be much more concerned about, as Don said, retention basins, sedimentation basins, things like that, to keep the water from getting out into the ocean.
That's a good, well, point well taken, Carl. Basically, I think as one of our colleagues said recently, our watersheds in Hawaii are suffering from kidney failure. We no longer have functioning healthy streams with riparian zones, and we no longer have functioning wetlands. They've either been obliterated, built upon, or they're clogged with invasive species and no longer function by spreading the water out and allowing it to drop its sediment load and organic material and keep that material in the wetland, which is functions as the watershed's kidney.
But it sounds like we have two kind of distinct aspects of water quality problems. One is during weather events like we're experiencing now, and we've got stormwater runoff that collects contaminants from the surface and rushes it to the streams. And then the other one is, even during good weather, we've got these high bacterial counts that you're saying that clearly the data show that it's coming from human sewage. So to me, there's those two distinct problems that need different solutions.
But Adam, that also looks only... what you're talking about are the bacteria counts, the fecal problem. I think that we as a community should also look more broadly at the problem of all the mud that's running off into the ocean from all the different sources, and then also the chemicals that are coming off the roads, coming off the parking lots, and the agricultural chemicals, whether those are fertilizers or pesticides, that are coming from large-scale, small-scale, and yard-scale large scale things there.
All right, great. Carl, we have a caller. Would you like to entertain a call?
Sure.
All right.
Caller, go ahead, please.
Yeah, you guys mentioned the Kalalau stream and this. I was wondering if you had some advice for the hiker out there, because there's going to be human waste out on the trail. You spend a few days out there. What do we do with it? Also, I was down in at the Pioneer, cruising by Pioneer. They had the water truck in the parking lot spraying out the parking lot about 10 days ago. The water was running down the Highway 50 into the Waimea River. Any advice for those guys? Thank you.
Great question, observations and questions.
Yeah, the first part of your question, even the U.S. Forest Service publishes a little publication on how to kukai in the woods, so to speak. And, you know, in and of itself, there is nothing wrong or unnatural about human waste, as long as they're put in the right places. There was a time in early Japanese history where they would actually build you a free house if you'd bring your family into that prefecture, so they had additional human manure for the rice fields. But it was handled appropriately. It was composted. It wasn't just thrown in the closest stream. So in a general way, you'd want to make sure that you're not near where it can get washed into the stream. If you can look up that U.S. Forest Service publication online, it's kind of funny, actually, but that's a good point. There was a second part of your question.
About agricultural runoff in Waimea.
Well, you know, that issue, even Carl mentioned it earlier, when you have monoculture, where you're growing only one thing, and you till hundreds or thousands of acres at a time, especially during the winter months, you're going to have huge soil erosion. You can go on YouTube and look at Red Dirt River in Kaumakani. I think that was February 7th, 2011. And really what that means in a broad way is that kind of farming really isn't farming. It's not even producing food for us. But if in sustainable or ecological agriculture, you always keep an abundance of different plants. You don't till at certain times of the year when you get heavy rains. And in fact, the federal government, U.S. Congress, in the 1990 Farm Bill, defines sustainable ag as the integration of plants and animals, where the byproducts of one are nutrient inputs for the other. And, you know, in good farming, you don't lose soil, you gain soil, and you take very good care of the biodiversity and soil organisms, because 99% of those soil organisms, from earthworms to bacteria, are beneficial to plant growth.
The caller that just called in mentioned that the tanker trucks were rinsing off the parking lots or the roads out on the west side, and that was just running into the river. That's illegal, and it's the same thing with all the car washes, that they can't just dump all that stuff and into our rivers and streams. That's inappropriate and probably illegal to do that on a regular basis. So there should be berms set there or something else. But there is, because of all the dust on the west side, because of the dry, there is a real problem. How do they handle that? I don't know the answer to that, but we really, the other thing is, we are in a water shortage. We have a problem that we are overextending the use of our water in our aquifers, and so we really shouldn't be washing roads down and things like that with potable drinking water.
If you've got to wash a road to get dirt off, it tells you something's sick in the watershed. Somebody's not treating the soil and the land properly. It's that simple.
Yeah, and there are better ways to, there are better ways of managing the land. You know, I've always been impressed. One of the areas I farm is in Kapaa, right off the bypass road, just Malka of where it connects to the main highway behind Foodland. And when the plantation farm there was, it was sugar up until, I guess...
1992.
Yeah, 92. And as I was kind of opening up the place to farm it again, exploring the place, I noticed there was this ditch that I couldn't quite understand how it was an irrigation ditch, because it was at the lowest point of the land. And it circumscribed the entire area.
It's a drainage ditch.
And it was a drainage ditch that the plantation had put in. It would collect any runoff from the entire, it's about a 100-acre parcel. It would collect any runoff from the entire 100 acres, and it funneled it, Mackay, into a sump that was dug into the old beach area. And so it funneled all runoff into what was essentially a large sand filter. And I have always been very, very impressed that the plantation, I don't know if they were forced to do it because they were farming so close to the ocean, but it's an example of how you can conduct fairly industrial-scale agriculture, but still be very cognizant in your best management practices. You know, the other thing a caller brought up about what to do with our human waste, you know, obviously it's an age-old problem, and I'm not convinced that our current system is the best way to deal with it. We know that our most recently designed septic systems fail. We know that our most recently constructed sewage treatment plants fail. So we still haven't solved this thing.
There's a great book by John and Jack Todd called From Eco Cities to Living Systems that shows how to solve that problem in a family, yep, biologically composting toilet. Go ahead, caller, please.
Hello. Thank you, folks, very much. This show is very important. What about marsh plants? You know, they imported the egret and the other, you know, things that came. How about importing a specific marsh plant or species of marsh plant that could help ameliorate and sort of repossess the land to itself, like it was in the olden times? My grandmother used to go through the marshes and when the three-masted boats were coming in Waikiki. And why don't we go back to the marshlands? So that's it. Thank you very, very much.
You know, that is a superb question. In fact, Adam and I were talking about that just before the show. A fellow named Ross in 1976 worked for the Fish and Wildlife Service, and in a wetland at Kahuku, he put a little 3-foot fence around about 11 acres of it. He put in 100 Chinese weeder geese, and in 4 to 6 months, that wetland was 95% open waterway. Before that, it was choked out with California grass and all kinds of things. I submitted a research proposal a few years back to the EPA's Wetland Restoration Program to use water buffalo to do that. And one 2,200-pound water buffalo with an electric fence placed strategically inside a wetland will do clear an acre of land in less than a month. And you don't have to pay them overtime. And you'll see water birds landing in those wetlands, those cleared wetlands, within 2 to 3 days. The water buffalo not only eat the California invasive grass, they also eat umbrella sedges that cows won't eat, but they also trample and wallow in that wetland, and they'll open up an area 100 by 100 feet in 1 week.
So, Carl, I think we have that's in addition to the natural wetlands that the caller was talking about, we recognize the utility of plants and taking up pollutants in our waters. Do we have constructed wetlands that are being used as water quality systems on Kauai?
I think we have a couple of them. The only one that I really know of is out at KA, where when they built the new restroom facility there, they were concerned about what was happening with all the wastewater and it being dumped on the Iwi Kupuna. And so they did construct a pond, which was rubber-lined and had gravel in it, and then they planted some bulrushes and some native sedges in there, and the water from the septic systems would go in there, and theoretically the plants would suck out the nutrients and also provide habitat for protozoans that would eat bacteria, and then the water was supposed to be really clean when it came out of there. Tests that I've done with a Kauai Community College student shows that it's not being very effective at reducing nutrient loads, and it's not being very effective at reducing bacteria loads. But it does meet the standards for biological oxygen demand, and it's supposedly the standards for turbidity.
Carl,
I don't know of any large-scale water, constructed wetlands in the islands. The only other kind, of course, are the teroloi, which are a constructed wetlands, whether they were constructed recently or 500 years ago or something like that.
I think we have another. We're going to take one more call.
Caller, go ahead, please.
Go ahead, caller.
I'm just wondering, because tourism is such an important economic piece of Kauai, the Poipu beaches, are they, obviously they're diluted because it's the ocean, but are they, where do they come in on this for bacteria?
With regard to the water quality in Poipu beaches. Is that
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you. Carl?
Yeah, the beaches are usually very clean, no bacteria detected. The surf sites right there in front of the Waiohai, at PK's further down, all of those are basically clean, no bacteria detected, except occasionally with some, when we get the rains coming up from the south, we may get some high bacteria counts. The other time that we get high bacteria counts on those beaches, if there's a large Hawaiian monk seal pooping on the beach, he puts a lot of bacteria into Poipu Beach Park or the other places. But now, in the past, the restroom facilities at Poipu Beach Park were septic system. They just put it into the sand there, but they have now changed that, eliminated those, and all of the sewage that's generated by the toilets there is pumped up to the wastewater treatment plant. So Poipu, that whole stretch of land there down in Poipu, all those hotels and the restaurants and the beach parks, all of that sewage is sent inland to the sewage treatment plant that's Mauka of Poipu Beach Road. And so, theoretically, it doesn't get into the ocean at all.
So on the south side, it's only Waikomo Stream mouth that has the high bacteria counts. Is that right?
Yes, and I don't think that's necessarily coming right from the hotels and things that are right there. I would bet that all the homes are not on the wastewater treatment plant. But some little testing that I've done seems to indicate that the high bacteria are coming from further in Mauka in the Apua.
So Waikomo Stream, that kind of comes through Old Kaloa Town itself.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Yeah, it comes through Old Kaloa Town and then down through the housing area and then by the golf course, which is irrigated by wastewater, and by the little shopping center and the fire department, fire station right on the banks of the stream. And then it goes under the bridge, and you have all those now massive homes that are, I think, all on septic systems right along the banks of the stream.
Yeah, and in a review of the literature that EPA published on the efficiency of septic systems, they've concluded that the absolute best designed one is only 60% efficient at removing nitrogen from the groundwater.
Yeah,
that's right.
So, yeah, and that's an issue that I think you touched on, Carl, is that it's not just the bacteria that can function as a pollutant. It's other things that are being discharged from our waste systems,
pharmaceuticals.
One of the things that we really have to worry about now, and the Department of Health throughout the nation are looking at, these are called emerging pollutants, it are all the personal care products. So whether it's antibacterial soaps or suntan lotions or insecticides or Tylenol or birth control estrogenic compounds, all of these things, most of them are excreted with the urine into the wastewater treatment systems, and they're not removed by septic systems or sewage treatment plants. And so all of that stuff then does get into the nearshore waters, and in fact a series of tests by the health department in the state has shown that some of those products are in measurable quantities. And unfortunately we have no idea how they affect the native ecosystems.
That's right.
Well, Carl, we're out of time today. I want to thank you for coming on the program and sharing the information, and thank you for the programs that you run. I was wondering if you could share with us if people are interested in participating. Do you guys need volunteers, or how could they help?
We right at the moment we're pretty filled with volunteers. We can only handle so much on our monthly water sampling projects. I would advise everybody to look at the kauai.surfrider.org website to find out about the surf breaks, and they can go on to the Department of Health website to find out how their water quality is in their neighborhood from the Department of Health. And then if they have concerns, contact the Department of Health and say, hey, you know, why aren't you posting? Why don't you clean up our waters?
Great, great.
Thanks, Carl.
Thank you so much, Carl.
Aloha.
All right. Aloha. And thank you, Dean, for engineering another version of Kauai Kai and Why.
Thank you, Adam and Don.
Thank you. Aloha.